This is WMNL Mobile.
Jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. What fun to ride and sing in a one-horse open sleigh. Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. O'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh.
Oh, another Christmas year. Ho, ho. Blast from the past, kind of like a wintry Arctic wind blasting out of the north. It's me again. Another story. One I hope you haven't heard. Yeah, we begin in the spring of 1965. So many years ago, it seems. No, it's true. Many, many years ago. Back when I was about 200 and some pounds lighter. Anyway, it was the spring of 1965. And like all good Kuhais and Kuhais of the past, Kuhais of the future, my sister decided to join the Navy. She wanted to become a wave. She thought she'd go out and see the world. So she joined the Navy and became a wave, and she got to see the exotic port of Lakehurst, New Jersey. They stationed her 3.5 hours away from Allendale. But I liked it because we used to get to go to Lakehurst Naval Air Station. My old man, he used to hate traveling, so we would make it the fastest trip possible. It's a 3.5 hour drive to Lakehurst. We leave at about 2:30 in the morning, get there about 6, with just enough time to say hi, eat breakfast, and leave and come home. And that's all we would do. We'd stay for about an hour, turn around, and come home. But in that hour, it was a great time because Lakehurst is a great naval base. The big hangars where the blimps and the dirigibles of the 30s would come in and land there. That was a major place for all the blimps, and of course the Hindenburg blew up there. Walk through the woods at Lakehurst and find little pieces of rubber. And this was amazing stuff when you're this age. Here's a piece of rubber from the Hindenburg. So I'd bring it home every week, you know, that we'd go down there, the weeks we'd go down there, and bring it back to my friends. Hey, Creep, look, a piece of rubber from the Hindenburg. Of course, years later, I found out it was a piece of tire rubber. There are some stories best left not told, and that's one of them. So, you know, we go to Lakehurst and visit. And this one time we were going down there, just out of the clear blue sky, my birthday was coming up in a few weeks, and my mom turned around and in her cigarette-laden voice said, "Well, Joe, what do you want for your birthday?" That was a little more feminine than that, but that's how it is. And I knew what I wanted. I had a ratty old bicycle, and I needed some new wheels. Turned around, I spoke right up. "I need a new bike." My old man just, "The hell? You got a bike. What you need a new bike for?" Well, I had a bike, in a sense. It kind of had wheels, and it kind of moved, but more on that later. I just needed a new set of wheels. I needed this bad. And of course, my old man, he kind of downplayed the whole situation automatically. He said, "What do you want? You want one of those bikes with the pansy bars?" And, "Dad, those are sissy bars." "Yeah, all right. And the banana split seat?" "No, banana seat. They could never get this stuff right. They weren't hip. They weren't cool. You know, they didn't know the terminology of the day." "Bet you want one of those Bang Ray bikes or whatever." "Oh, no, Dad. It's a Stingray. It's a Stingray bike, not Bang Ray, or whatever it is. They can never get these things right." I said, "No, I don't want a Stingray. Do not get me a Stingray. Do you understand me? I do not want a Stingray." And I had to keep emphasizing this over and over again because parents have this way of really not hearing what a kid says. You know, I asked for a Super Ball one time. Back then, a fad was the Super Ball. Hard, rock-hard compressed piece of rubber. It was a ball that, if you just dropped it, didn't even have to throw it. It would bounce 200 feet in the air. And this thing was so hard, it was like getting shot with a musket ball in the forehead if you got hit by one. You'd take out brick walls when you hit it. It was a hard piece of rubber. Everybody had to have a Super Ball. And I told my mom I wanted a Super Ball, and she came back with a Super Ball. S-O-U-P-E-R, ball. A round gelatinous-like ball. When you slung it against the wall, it kind of splattered a little bit and then slid down. It was cool, but it wasn't a Super Ball. So you had to stress this stuff. I don't want a Stingray. I want a Schwinn 10-speed Continental derailleur. That was the Cadillac of all bikes back then. This was the ultimate bike. And they all laughed. Yeah, right. Do you know how much that frickin' thing is? My old man said. $99.50. My mom, of course, started throwing out all the parentalisms that she could. You think we're made of money? You think money grows on trees? Blah, 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 blah. Well, I just sunk back in my seat and knew that I wouldn't be getting a bike for my birthday. And son of a gun, if I wasn't right, here comes my birthday, and what do I get? A kooky camera. It was a Polaroid camera for kids. It had about 20 pieces that you assemble yourself, and all the pieces looked like trash. There was boxes and soda cans and the lens. The last piece you put on was the actual camera lens that looked like a tomato soup can. It did take pictures, but they looked like they came out of a Civil War journal. That kind of grainy old picture. Anyway. So that was my birthday that year. The sad fact of the matter was I really needed a bike. I needed it really bad. The bike that I had, like I said before, you know, parents have this way of not hearing what kids really want. If they find something that halfway sounds like they wanted, some what the kid wanted, that's what they'd get. So I didn't have a Schwinn. I had a Schwartz. A Schwartz Studebaker is what we called it. It was a horrible bike. Not within days when I first got the bike, it began rusting. The spokes would pop out randomly. As you drive down the road, it would whack people in the legs as you went by. It was horrible. The clamp that tightened the seat down, you know, you adjust the seat to different heights so it would fit you. The clamp wouldn't tighten enough, so you'd be driving along, and all of a sudden, whoosh, you go down, and your knees would be up around your head as you're trying to pedal this bike. It was a horrible thing. And, you know, it was just a laugh a minute with this bike. It was pathetic is what it was. Back then, and actually still today up in New Jersey, adults would have to take their cars to get inspected once a year. And what they would do is go to the centralized location, and the Department of Motor Vehicles would inspect the car from top to bottom. They'd check the admissions to see if the carbon monoxide was at a certain level, check the lights, see if they worked, the horn, make sure it worked. And if you passed, you got a green sticker that would go on your window with the number of the month that you came down and got inspected. The only bad part about this thing is the population in northern New Jersey is so massive, so huge, you would have to take a whole day off from work to have your car inspected. It would take you 7 or 8 hours to get through the line. That's how long it was. And the bad thing was, if you failed, you get that little red sticker in your window, and you'd have to come back within 5 days and do it again, another 7 to 8 hours waiting in line to get your car inspected. Years later, Creedence Clearwater Revival came out with a song called Lodi. Oh Lord, I'm stuck in Lodi again. Yeah, well, the place, our central location for having our car inspected was Lodi. So every time I'd have my car inspected, that song would pop into my head. Oh Lord, stuck in Lodi again. But anyway, it was the same thing with bikes back then. For 25 cents, you could take your bike to the police station, and they'd inspect your bike for safety, make sure everything is tight, lubricated, ready to go, tires aired up all right, and then they'd give you a sticker. It was a license to prove that your bike was safe. I'd take my bike down there, and the cops would just laugh at me. They'd give me the license because there was no way they could pass it. Now, don't even pay us. Here's your sticker. Go. Peace be with you. And off I'd go, swacking people in the legs with the spokes, and I traveled back home again. Bike was so bad that we'd drive our bikes to school, and they'd have rows upon rows upon rows of bike racks where you'd stick your bike in and then take a chain with a padlock and lock it there so no one would steal it. I wouldn't even lock mine in hopes of someone stealing it. They never did. That's how pathetic this bike was. So all through the summer, all through the fall of the 1965 year, I suffered with this bike until finally got to the point where I wouldn't ride it anymore. If we went anywhere, I'd walk. I'll meet you guys there. Give me about an hour. I'll be downtown at Schwartz's. Well, the fall came and went, and now Christmas time arrives. And through this whole time, I'm begging for a bike. I'm like, please, I'm embarrassed. I can't. And my old man, like, nah, it's good enough for you. We used to have to walk everywhere, blah, blah, blah. And that's what I ended up doing most of the time, just walking to wherever we had to go. And it was just embarrassing. The only kid in town without a bike that you could use. So Christmas time came around, and it was Christmas was on a Saturday that year. And the Friday before, Christmas Eve, and it was a snowy day. We had like 4 feet of snow outside. Roads were fairly clear. They did a nice job with that this year, but the drifts were just magnificent. We'd be running through the drifts, lost my boots, got stuck in a drift, lost my boots, ran home in my stocking feet because my boots were stuck in the snow drift. It would take until spring before I found them again. I come running up into the house. Now, the thing about our house in Allendale was it was a two-story house, a nice little suburban home. There was only two ways into this house on the bottom floor, front way through the porch, or you could come around the side of the house where there was this little extension built onto the side. You would think it should have been a mudroom, is what it should have been. It was a bathroom. It was the half bath for the downstairs. So as you came in through the front door, to the side door actually, you never knew if the door was locked or not and who might be sitting there doing their business. It was always a surprise. You open the door, sorry, didn't mean it. So I come flying up the stairs, barefooted, feet are freezing, got my mittens on, my scarf, my big woolly hat, big old heavy wool jacket, come flying up the stairs, throw the door open. Oh, what the hell? That's my old man. He's sitting inside this bathroom. But he wasn't doing his business. He had stuff all around him, tools and all. Go around the other side. All right. So I go bopping around the side of the house and back into the front porch, and in the porch, there's radiators there, the old-fashioned cast-iron radiators. So you take off your mittens and your scarf and all, and you hang them up on the radiator to dry, and all the while, the radiator's clinking in the background. Clinking, building up steam for the night, big, cold, frosty night ahead. I go bopping into the kitchen and into this little room, this little half-bath that's on the side of the house. It's also kind of weird having the bathroom right next to the kitchen, too. It was just kind of weird setup. And I walk inside, and there's my old man. He's working on something. He's building a bicycle. What are you doing? I'm building a bike. The hell it looks like I'm doing? Oh, I look closer, and it's a Schwinn Continental 10-speed derailleur. Oh, my eyes began to glow. Christmas Eve, the bike is here. I've stumbled onto the mother load. He goes, hey, get that look off your face. Oh, what? What? This is a beautiful bike, Dad. This isn't for yours. This is Creep's. I'm building it for his old man so he can sneak it over tonight and surprise Creep. Oh, my heart sank. Oh, what a letdown. Talk about the Hindenburg exploding. Oh, man, I exploded right there all over the floor. My eyes welled up with tears. My old man just went back to working. I walk upstairs. Head hung down. My mom as I walked through the kitchen. Come on, dear, dinner ready in just a few minutes. I didn't even answer. I just walked upstairs. I could care less what was for dinner. Walked through the kitchen, into the living room, the tree, 8-foot-tall tree next to the staircase, just glowing in all different colors. The big disc of a rainbow light spinning its colors on it. Table, once again, loaded with all the candies you can imagine and cookies. I could care less. This was it. Life was over. I walked up the stairs, locked myself into the room, with the street light out there. There was no snow this year, just cold, just like I felt, cold. My sister pounds on the door around 11:30. Hey, come on, we gotta go to church.
I said, I'm not going to church. I'm not going. I'm a bitter man. So they went off. My sisters went off to candlelight midnight mass down the street. And I sat there sobbing all night long. Back then, I was privileged. I had a television in my room. And of course, here we go again. My folks, they meant well, but they gave me a television. It was probably from 1955. It was this huge steel television. My desk that it sat on was just bending with the weight and creaking. The tuning knob on the side was about 6 inches wide, and you turn it, it would clunk. It was a behemoth of a television. And the black and whiteness of this TV was unbelievable. And I had the TV on in the background. Back then, there was only 3 or 4 channels. And the local CBS channel in New York would have a thing called The Late Show. And they would show movies all night long until the morning shows would come on. And it would begin with The Late Show, and they'd show a movie. And the beginning of The Late Show would have this graphic of the city skyline with all the lights on, everybody still up. Then about 1 o'clock, it would turn into The Late Late Show. And that same graphic would have half the lights turn off, and they show another movie. And then pretty soon, about 3 o'clock, it'd be The Late, Late, Late Show. And now only one light was left on in the city. Everybody else was asleep. And they'd show a movie. On a Christmas Eve, they would show one movie over and over again. It was Alistair Sims' Christmas Carol.
Some would rather die.
Back in the 50s.
If they would rather die, they'd better do it and decrease the surplus population.
I love that movie.
Besides, it's not my
probably business. Because of this night. I watched that movie 4 times that night, one after the other. I couldn't sleep. This was just going to be a horrible morning. Well, the final light of The Late, 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 Late Show went off, and I thought it was time to go downstairs, and I drug myself down the stairs, and sitting there beneath the tree, all the lights and all the glittery paper, was a bike. It was the Schwinn Continental 10-speed derailleur. My God! My heart stopped. I fell to the floor. I started screaming. I ran around the house. This was amazing! And then I realized I discovered the truth about Santa Claus. Other kids have known this for a long time. But this year, it finally came to me. I learned the truth about Santa Claus. It was only sort of upsetting. I handled it very well. I can understand the truth about Santa Claus. He can't bring the big toys. He can only do the little ones. It's up to your parents to bring the big ones. Of course. I was asking the wrong person all this time for this stuff. There you go. Beautiful. It was a Christmas to remember.